Hello, I am Emma, the 11th Duchess of Rutland, and this is Duchess, a podcast in which I explore the most historic homes of the UK and meet the inspiring women who lead them. As a daughter of a Welsh farmer, I grew up far away from the glamour and wealth of aristocracy, but my life changed forever when I fell in love and married my husband, the 11th Duke of Rutland. Suddenly, one of Britain's most historic buildings was not only my home, but under my care. I wanted to hear the stories of other women like me, the custodians of these great homes. So in this podcast, I will travel to breathtaking homes and meet the inspiring women who lead these estates today. Please join me on this special journey. This is Duchess, the podcast. Cradled between the magnificent glens of Angus and the sand-speckled shores of Montrose Bay is one of Britain's most spectacular sites, Kinnaird Castle. The estate's French baronial-style features, towers, crenellations and balconies, combined with the surrounding parkland teeming with life, forests, deers and protected species, create a profound sense of epic for this estate. But Kinnaird's appearance does not misrepresent the occupants. The Dukes and Duchesses of Fife, the Carnegie family, have had a huge cultural and political impact, going all the way back to James, Marquess of Montrose, who led the Royal Army in the 1640s Civil War, to the first Earl of Fife, who married Louise, Princess Royal and daughter of Edward VII. I sat down with the incredible Duchess of Fife, Caroline. The Duchess runs the estate alongside her husband, David, and under their custodianship, the house has flourished. I couldn't wait to learn more about the estate's famed art collection. I was eager to hear more about Kinnaird conservation projects, but first, I was hoping the Duchess would illuminate the wonderful history of Kinnaird. As a consequence of the UK lockdown, this episode was recorded remotely.
Thank you so much for joining me today.
It's a pleasure.
Kinnaird is open to the public?
Well, actually, no, it's not. Kinnaird's in Angus, and Angus is really one of the lesser known counties in Scotland. It's not on the tourist trail. It's not sort of so much visited, which actually makes it all the more charming in a way. And we sort of sit between the beautiful sort of mountains and the east coast.
What percentage of the building do you actually live in?
Well, we've got sort of the main rooms of the house, and we've now sort of moved down to where we built for my father-in-law. And it's almost like living in a townhouse at the end of a really huge building. But it makes it very much easier for just knowing where things are. And then I'd say, because it's largely Victorian in its nature at the moment, it's not like a Georgian precious house where everything has its place and has to be in that place. It's actually got a nice feel. And I never thought that I would say that when I first looked at it years ago. I thought it looked quite daunting and little bit dark and depressing, actually.
Yeah, no, we'll come to that now, if we may. Tell us about the first memory of seeing Kinnaird Castle and what your thoughts were.
I can remember coming down the drive and thinking it just went on and on forever. It really did. And we went to see my grandfather-in-law, who was living here then. Amazing man who died in his late 90s. It was sort of lots of long, dark stone corridors that you had to go down to get to where he was. It was quite spooky, eerie in a way, because of its lack of light. And, you know, it hadn't been modernised from the war right through till the early 90s.
Goodness me. And your father-in-law didn't live there, is that right?
He dodged a bullet there. It wouldn't have suited him. It's hard work taking a big building and bringing it into use, if you like. I mean, just to be relevant to now, it takes quite a lot of imagination and work, really, and it just wasn't for him.
No, because he had a very interesting life, and then it was James, yes?
Yeah.
And then retired and withdrew and became quite a private man. And
He was quite a sad man, actually, really. He was very, very shy, and I think he'd always disappointed his own father. And so he really did lack a lot of confidence. I mean, he could be wicked. He never grew up. He was in many ways like a small child right to the end of his days. But he always had the capacity to infuriate and amuse at the same time.
So the Carnegies, if I may just go on to your important family history, just give us a little insight into the lineage and tell us about their connection with the royal family.
The house itself, Kinnaird, is 600 years of South Esk's Carnegies. It's been pretty unbroken, except the family were on the wrong side with the old pretender. He actually fled from Montrose with the Earl of the Day. There was briefly that it was owned by the York Building Society and bought back later on by the closest family relation. The royal bit comes in a good deal later, and actually it was this great-grandfather-in-law who I met, a most amazing old man. He married Princess Maud, who was granddaughter of Edward VII.
Goodness. Tell me about, Caroline, some of the extraordinary women in the lineage of your family, the ones that you aspire to and look up to.
I suppose the one that absolutely intrigues me was Agnes. We've got the most lovely portrait in the dining room by Raeburn. It's absolutely charming. And she was a daughter of the governor of New York, Andrew Elliot. And her uncle said that if she married for love, he'd give her £5,000, which I think back in sort of 1780 would have been quite a significant sum. She came to Kinnaird. She had 10 daughters before she had her first son, which wasn't bear thinking about, really. But she was very artistic, and she built a lot of the follies around the place. Some beautiful stick and fir cone houses that were built with her daughters. All of them decorated them. And there's some lovely paintings by her. Yeah, she was fantastic. And she outlived her husband by 56 years.
Goodness me.
Yeah.
Gosh.
So we've got an old picture of her as well in her bonnet and looking quite different from the rather beautiful fay woman in the huge portrait at the end of the dining room.
Oh, how wonderful. And amazing how much you've learned of this family history that you've married into. I remember when I first arrived having all these portraits looking at me and this family history that would wash over my head and I didn't take any of it in. But with time, somehow you begin to absorb it, don't you? And it becomes, I guess, your way of talking about it and telling the story, and you're handing over the baton to the next generation.
Yeah, it just slowly but surely gets under your skin, doesn't it? And I'm married to a great historian. He's brilliant on it. And so I listen to him. I learn something every time.
Oh.
And I hope that I remember it well enough that when I do my tours, I'm not giving people a whole bunch of misconstrued ideas.
Well, you do it with your voice and in your way. And as a woman, we always have a way of portraying our homes and our history. And it's fascinating hearing it from you, Caroline. If we may go into how you met your husband.
Well, that was a very long time ago, and we were probably only about 16, and a friend and I went to the Rocky Horror Show and went on to stay with him afterwards in London. And then paths seemed to cross over years, and I suppose friendship formed. And at that point, I definitely didn't think he would be interested in someone like me long term, perhaps, but it was turned out to be wrong there.
Oh, and so had you had any connection with aristocracy before you met your husband and married and moved to Kinnaird?
Not especially. I suppose if you are around London, you meet the odd one, but it certainly wasn't what I was looking for particularly, that was for sure.
And were you brought up in a countryside environment?
Yes, I suppose I've always been a bit of a tomboy, a horse lover. My father was a brewer for Courage Breweries. So we moved around a little bit, and I just pretty idyllic childhood, really. I didn't have to worry too much about anything other than building dams and riding ponies.
So, a bit rather like me, you're a member of the pony club.
Of course, yes.
How would you describe right now your role at your home? And do you feel supported in that role?
Hugely. You know, it's a generational thing, isn't it? You're just one cog in the wheel of how the house works, really. And it's like anyone in an institution, you bring your own talents. There'll be things you do well, there'll be things you do badly. And you hope that whoever comes next scoops up the things you do badly and puts them right. In terms of support, I think David and I are complementary. He's got tremendous attention for detail. He's the most fantastic historian and logical. And I'm just the enthusiast who says, come on, let's try this. Let's go and do this. And because I start, he has to finish it.
That's wonderful. Have you come across any obstacles at all?
You sort of come across them daily, but I guess in a funny sort of way, this strange year of lockdown, it's just like a slightly aggrandized version of what happens on a normal year, really. You're just always looking to keep things on track. And you sort of feel with places like this, because you've had to be adaptable over so many years, you survive, don't you? You get on and you, some things work, some things don't, but don't beat yourself up about the ones that don't work so well.
Well, that's great advice. And certainly, certainly when you live in places like this, because every day you'll have an up and a down. Just as we went into this chat, I could see that we had a chimney fire.
Oh.
And so they'd lit a fire in the guard room and they were rushing down to put the buckets to put it out. We're all only as able as the teams around us. That's the key thing. And they're so precious to you when you've got the right ones with you.
They really, really are. And you can't manage these things without the right team around you. And they are like family, actually. They feel like family to me.
They certainly are, yeah. You've famously been said to shy away from the title that you have, that you're not obviously out there being a duchess. What did that mean to you?
I just don't feel any different from anyone else. You just feel I'm very lucky to be in the position I am. And I definitely don't want to denigrate that wonderful history or anything like that. But I guess underneath it all, I'm just pretty down to earth. So the idea of being waited on hand and foot and waltzing in and playing the grand part just doesn't really appeal. I think we're more likely to be found up a ladder trying to change a light bulb.
Well, if it's any consolation, Caroline, I've interviewed quite a few girls doing this job, and there's not one of them, I would say, who would be swanning around, because the reality is you have to be incredibly hands-on.
Mm.
And it certainly wouldn't suit anyone who had come accustomed to people running around. That's most probably why it's so important our sons choose the right women to support them, because it's definitely not what you perceive from the outside looking in. Would you agree with that?
I completely agree with you. And it is, as you say, a difficult task for them in a way to find somebody who is genuine and prepared to be a Jacqueline of all trades. You definitely have to be adaptable, don't you? And I'm sure you have been by the sound of it.
I'm a farmer's daughter from Wales. So when we weren't in lambing, we were running the house to do farmhouse B&B. So my job was front of house serving breakfast. And it's very similar in a grander way to that now, of course, because we're all making our homes work in whatever way we do need to.
It's wonderful to hear the Duchess has such confidence in herself and the role she has so beautifully managed at Kinnard. You've been listening to Duchess, the podcast presented by me, Emma Rutland, and produced by One Fine Play in collaboration with Beaver Castle. I am spellbound each day by Beaver, but nothing can compare with the spine-tingling magic of experiencing this place for yourself. So I've decided to set up a number of Duchess days when, if you join me, you will be my personal guest for a behind-the-scenes tours of just about all you can see here at this castle. Staterooms, including the Regent's Gallery, the Elizabeth Saloon, all inspired by Versailles, the ballroom, the old kitchen, the armory, and the behind-the-scenes. Plus, a tour on wheels of the Capability Brown Extensive Park. Woven into all this, I can promise you, you will have a delicious lunch, during which we can talk about the nuts and bolts of living in England's most romantic, but at times very impractical castle. Times being what they are, just now, I'm only penciling in two dates, one this year on June the 25th, and one in September. But do let me know if you'd like to join my provisional invitation list, and I'll get in touch once I'm confident I can make the confirmed arrangements, strictly observing the COVID rules of the day. If you are interested, look at Duchess Days below in the below link. Caroline and I have so much in common. We, of course, are both duchesses. We both have a love of the countryside, and I was wondering if she had similar experiences of ghosts in her home.
Kinard is famous for its incredible art collection. What is it like to be the caretaker of these priceless works of art?
Well, I would say if you picked anything out here, it would certainly be the art. And there's some wonderful old Italian collections from the Grand Tours. I think in terms of portraiture, it's got a tremendous history because I think there's 13 generations in the dining room. We have quite a lot of interest from art groups, and they say that it is a perfect through the centuries example of every type of important Scottish portrait artist.
I've got here my notes which are saying to me include paintings of Dutch, Flemish, Italian schools, as well as Rabier, Durer, Van Dyck and Holbein.
Well, sadly, there was a tremendous fire here that burnt through the whole house, actually, in the 1920s. And I think I'm right in saying that the Durer, sadly, that was one of the casualties. It wasn't burnt, but it was sold to pay for the rebuild. And I think many would question why in the 1920s you would rebuild a massive castle. But they did, and they got just over halfway. And then the rest was an empty shell. And we actually built out the final elements of it.
Oh, fabulous.
Although the library has not been replaced.
So how did the fire begin?
Well, they think that it was in the butler's section of the castle. And they think perhaps, you know, a tea towel or something was too close to the fire. And it seemed to spread right the way through all the front rooms of the castle.
Gosh, that's extraordinary. And it is just that extraordinary way in which, despite everything, these houses survive. So one of the castle's great treasures, I believe, is a bridal portrait.
Oh, yes. He's probably the only ancestor in the dining room who isn't a sort of direct ancestor. So the Marquis of Montrose, and his story is just the most amazing one. I mean, he was an incredible man. The first Earl, I believe, was his guardian, and he then married the daughter. So he was only 17 when he got married to her. And I think they spent a lot of their early years here at Kinnaird. And I think that's where the two young sons were brought up a good deal of the time. And then, of course, he went on his campaigns all around Scotland before fleeing the country. And when he came back, he met rather a grisly end. And he was hung, drawn and quartered.
And that was quite gruesome. It was very literal, hung, drawn and quartered.
One hopes they did the job at the hanging, really. I think wasn't there some great line that you paid your hangman, sort of heavily bribed him to make sure he finished you off so that you didn't have to go through the rest of it.
Dreadful.
He's very handsome too. He does look very gorgeous, actually.
Oh, no home such as we live in, Caroline, would ever be without a few ghosts. Is that something you like we share? Do you have your resident ghost at Kinnaird?
We do. There's two that I've heard a lot of and many people have seen, but they're friendly. So I would never worry being here on my own, which I often am, and, you know, at night. Just doesn't worry me at all because it's got a nice feeling.
And you've never seen a ghost of any description?
We lived in a very old house in Yorkshire and lived in an old house there. And there was a girl who appeared at the end of my bed every night. And again, she never worried me. I think she was a kitchen maid who was murdered. So it's a horrible, gruesome story. But that ability to see a ghost and to feel it seemed to go. I don't know whether it's a child thing in particular or not. But it's strange, isn't it, how some people can continue to be sensitive to that all their lives.
It is. And I would say that I thankfully have never seen a ghost here. However, I definitely have got the Fifth Duchess with me all the time, making sure I'm doing everything that she planned. And I often feel I was put here to finish off the job that she had started and not completed.
That's amazing. So when was she?
She's the Duchess that built the castle, the Fifth Duchess. So she was called Elizabeth, who came from Castle Howard. And she had grown up in a very grand home and arrived at this rather dull Charles II building. And so on their honeymoon, it was a love marriage, she instructed James Wyatt to come and virtually take the Charles II building down to the foundations and rebuild this extraordinary building, but died tragically young. And it hadn't really completed it because they also had a great fire here. So, yes, sometimes I definitely talk to her. And now they're going to say they're all completely potty, these women.
I think that's wonderful, though, because I think there has to be for us all an incentive to drive you forward, to make everything relevant and to make it live, really, doesn't there?
Well, I don't know if you found this, but it's very few people you can truly talk to because it's not like any other life. And it appears so different looking in. And so you can definitely talk to the girls who've been there and done it before you, even if they can't answer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's definitely hard to explain how a large house like this just envelops you, doesn't it? It just takes over every aspect of your life, really.
So if we may, moving on, because I'm feeling we could chat forever. We straight away seem to be so much on the same page. Something that defines Kinnaird is the huge number of sustainability and conservation projects that you have. Would you share with our listeners some of these great projects that you're doing?
The biomass boiler was one of the first, but we've also got a hydro scheme on the river, which we walked past today, and it's going great guns with all this rain. It's sort of, it's quite nice seeing the water pouring through and going the right way.
And that's going into the grid, straight into the grid.
That's going straight into the grid, yeah.
Well done, you.
We're certainly exploring solar, and that seems to be a good place for that, you know, with the connections. We're near the North Sea, so a lot of our infrastructure has been increased here to take more power.
Do you have a red squirrel project?
Oh, well, we're so lucky to have red squirrels here, and they really are a joy. They're fantastic. And I think we trap upwards of 100 greys a year. I think they're very keen that the greys from Aberdeen don't come down to meet the greys from south of us to create a sort of a super squirrel. So we're very much on the front line of trying to keep the grey population down. And they are charming, the red squirrels.
Oh, I can remember as a child adoring them, and I've missed them so much. And woodpeckers you have, osprey, owls. It's rich with bird life.
We're very lucky because not only are we near the coast, but we're just inland from the Montrose Basin, which is a sort of wildlife centre. So we don't know how lucky we are with so many different species that come through.
Yes, because the environmental crisis are some of the biggest threats actually facing us today. And the conservation with stately homes is crucial to ensure that we modernise and adapt these surrounding areas in the future. And it seems as if you're doing a wonderful wonderful job with that, Caroline.
In terms of conservation and making it relevant going forward, I just see that as the most important. It is about being custodians, isn't it? And genuinely, I do think that around and about some of the best stately homes who have kept up and kept relevant, you see the diversity of trees, countryside, of conservation. It's so marked compared to a place that's changed hands a number of times, and you just see a continuity there, and that definitely brings better variety of species and variety of everything, because it's constantly been looked at and cared for. I love that part of it.
Architecturally, just go through the architecture of the building.
So, I mean, it literally has been standing here for over 600 years. Actually, weirdly, this part of the house, which has now been redone as the most recent, but this one here is the old, you can see the cellar structure, you can see the old walls, you can see everything that was beforehand. And it was just built on and built on. I think the most attractive period was Playfair in the sort of 1790s. And then only 60, 70 years later, Bryce was commissioned to Victorianize it. And he did a lot of castles in Scotland. He got his hands on a lot of castles. In some respects, what he did was not what we think of today as being very charming and beautiful. But there were certain things he was very good at. He loved big windows. So a lot of the windows that we've got here almost to the floor on the sort of the main floor, and it's got a terrace at the front on the main floor. So actually it's accessible at all levels, and it's quite sort of chunky. I would say it's quite robust. You know, you talked about your dark back passages and corridors. There's quite a few of those here, but they've all had rollerblades down them and all sorts of cars and toys and whatever. So they feel sort of friendly to me.
I agree. We have corridors that go on and on. And they were great fun for the children when they played. I think it was runner. Their favourite game was hide and seek and runner, and also sardines. So what has being a duchess taught you, Caroline?
I suppose I'm only newly a duchess, but I haven't felt a tiny bit different from the day it happened. I don't feel any different. I suppose the responsibility, to my mind, comes more from the house than it does from the name as such. I suppose the label just comes as part of it. Yeah, I think you just carry on and be as normal and approachable as you possibly can.
Yeah, I often feel that we live in our own sort of bubbles, don't we? In our own worlds on these estates.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know about you, Caroline, but, you know, when people look at these buildings, there is a great sense of stability for the surrounding communities, because it's almost the big house on the hill is still there.
Yeah.
So life will carry on. And we've certainly found that in lockdown, where so many people have visited. We actually opened our gardens for free to just get people out here enjoying them after COVID. And that's what I feel we're going back to, is that local community for local people.
Yeah, you're making me feel quite emotional, because I think that's so true, and we all have to relate to something. And I think that having that longevity and the always been there, and just actually appreciating their locality, and I've really thought that that's been a special part of this year.
So I've got two very special questions that I'd like to wind up today with, and they're my X Factor questions. I do kind of ask everyone, but everyone has a different answer, and yours is uniquely yours. But what would you say to the women of Kinnaird, six generations in the past, sitting in that room now, if they were sitting next to you?
Well, I would hope that they would see the continuation of what they would have started in their day, and they would see there was a likeness in terms of custodianship and bringing up family. I think, you know, we've been very lucky to be able to be there all through young families living within the walls. And at the end of the day, all of us women, by nature, we're carers and looking to the next generation and preparing them for the same thing. So I sort of hope that they would look on fondly and hope that they would think that I continued the job okay.
We all feel a bit like that, don't we? Am I getting it right? And then likewise, what would you say to six generations in the future?
Gosh, well, I think six generations past to now has moved so far and so fast. Six generations on, I mean, goodness knows what will be available and what will be had and how different a castle life will be. My head would spin at what might be happening in six generations' time. But, you know, my hope is that the walls are robust enough, so hopefully it still has some relevance to life in that time. I hope so.
I'm sure it will. And I always say to mine, when I speak to them silently in the dead of night, just make sure you run it and it doesn't run you, because there yes. have been far too many people who run these houses who are chewed up and spat out by it all. Mm. And it isn't for the faint-hearted, is it? But enjoying it is the key thing, I think.
Completely, because if you don't have those happy moments, then what's the point? That's the fun bit of it, is that when there are big gatherings there, and it doesn't matter whether they're corporate and paid for or whether it's just seeing people enjoying a place as much as you do, brings a pleasure, doesn't it? That will always be the case wherever you are and whoever you are. It is a joy seeing a place being happy.
Well, I have to say, Caroline, I have been enchanted today talking to you, the most humble of duchesses, the Duchess of Fife. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much indeed. I have enjoyed it.
You've been amazing.
I was nervous, but I have enjoyed it.
Thank you so much, Duchess, for joining us today on the podcast. I'm so grateful you took the time to lend your wonderful insight, your knowledge and your humour for a time on this show. Kinnard's conservation work is a blueprint of how everyone on this earth should approach this climate crisis. If we can't protect our futures, how on earth do we look at protecting our past? So thank you so much, Caroline, for leading the fight on this. Next week, I will be travelling to Nebworth House to meet another extraordinary female trailblazer, the Honourable Martha Lytton Cobbold. Martha explains Nebworth's tradition of homing cultural icons, from writers to suffragettes to rock stars. Martha elaborates on her important work with the Historic Houses Association, and she also explains what exactly Mick Jagger left behind in his suite. Couple of quick notes before we go. Important ones. Make sure you subscribe to Duchess the podcast so you get automatically notified about new episodes wherever you listen to a podcast. I want to know about you and what you think of the show, so please be sure to send me your comments and tell me about your own lineage and the women who have inspired you in your life. Please write to me on duchess@duchessthepodcast.com. And if there are any stately homes in particular you'd like me to visit, do send your suggestions to me as soon as possible. I've started a newsletter that includes all this and more and comes straight to your inbox. It's really easy to sign up at duchessthepodcast.com. You've been listening to Duchess, the podcast, presented by me, Emma Rutland, the Duchess of Rutland, produced by One Fine Play in collaboration with Beaver Castle. From Beaver Castle, Lady Violet Manners is the executive producer. From One Fine Play, James Bishop is the executive producer. Kasra Ferruzia is the audio and visual engineer. Connor Foley is the editorial producer and researcher. Additional creative support from Selena Christofis and Theo Banner. Thanks for listening to Duchess, the podcast.